Hello, everyone. This is Natural E. Thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On today's show, Richard Mabian will speak with Teresa Kelly of Cultivate KC, and Mike Murphy will speak with Craig Volland with the Kansas City Food Circle about the local and organic food expos, one's past and the one coming up. But first, I have your news headlines. Rail cars moving crude oil need makeover. The Department of Transportation's 111S rail cars were designed in the early 1960s and were originally used to haul non-hazardous materials such as corn syrup, but now they transport crude oil and ethanol across the country. A sharp increase in North American crude oil production has pushed a high percentage of crude oil onto the railroad tracks. In 2008, there were 9,500 carloads of crude oil on the tracks in the country, and in 2013, that number ballooned to 415,000 carloads, according to the Association of American Railroads. The amount of crude oil spilled last year was more than the total amount spilled in the 37 previous years. Kansas and Missouri heavy oil area draws new operator. The Oil and Gas Journal published that Worthington Energy Incorporated in San Francisco said it will attempt to recover heavy oil on the Barr Cattle Company released near Totopa in southeastern Kansas. A press release issued by Worthington provided no details about the proposed project, but said it would be conducted in collaboration with American Dynamic Resources Incorporated. It was not clear when field work might start. State geological organizations in Kansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma have identified a resource of billions of barrels of viscous oil trapped in relatively shallow formations that underlie several counties, mostly along the Kansas-Missouri and Kansas-Oklahoma state lines. Fracking's earthquake risks push states to collaborate. Several U.S. states are banding together to combat the mounting risks of earthquakes tied to the disposal of wastewater from hydraulic fracturing for natural gas. Regulators from Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma, and Ohio met for the first time this month in Oklahoma City to exchange information on the man-made earthquakes and help states toughen their standards. Quote, "It was a very productive meeting, number one, because it gave the states the opportunity to get together and talk collectively about the public interest and the science." Jerry Baker, who attended as Associate Executive Director of the Interstate Oil and Gas Compact Commission, a group that represents energy-producing states, said in an interview, "It was a good start in coordinating efforts." Pumping fracking wastewater underground has been linked to a six-fold jump in quakes in the central U.S. from 2000 to 2001, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Thanks, Mike.
All right, thanks, Naturally, for the news right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Eco Radio KC, and my name is Mike Murphy, and joining me on the line is Craig Volland. Are you there, Craig?
Yes, I sure am.
Oh, great. Thanks for taking the time to join us this evening, Craig.
Happy to do so.
So, the food circle has been putting on they used to call them farmers expos, and now they're referring to them as Eat Local
and organic
expos.
Yeah.
But under both names, the thing's been going on for over a decade now, right?
16 years.
Yeah, that's I'm doing the math. That's over a decade.
Right.
How have things changed over? First of all, let's start at the beginning. Let's not make any assumptions for any of our listeners. Tell us what the food circle is.
Well, the Kansas City Food Circle is a not-for-profit group, all-volunteer group, that actually started around 1988 to begin with. And the idea was to try to develop a community food system based on environmental sustainable principles. Ben Chalsis of the Kansas City Greens at that time was the one who came up with this idea and went around the country to talk to people and came back, and we thought that was a great thing for the group to do at that time, was to begin to find local organic farmers. And we started out with one or two, And now I think we're up close to 100. We have a directory that they all have listings in. So that's how it started. And then in, I guess, in the mid-90s, we started doing that directory that people could find them and where they sell their stuff. And then in 1999, in cooperation with the Sierra Club, our group at that time was then called the Kansas City Food Circle, we decided to do a conference on the food system and invite anybody who wanted to come to talk about how we would essentially combat industrial agriculture, which was creating these horrible animal factories and also seducing the American people with all these processed foods that tasted great but weren't particularly healthy. And we felt that people should begin to learn to eat from local farmers that were doing it the right way. So we had this conference, and I thought, well, you know, if we're going to have all these people here, we should actually invite some farmers in. So this was at the Holiday Inn in Mission, where we had this conference, and they had this other room, and so I brought these farmers in. And just as a kind of a side thought, I put an ad in the Johnson County Sun, and all these people showed up. They wanted this, so that was the beginning. That was the first year. We just kind of happened on to the fact that this was in March. It was early March then, that people wanted to meet farmers and begin to eat healthier and be more environmentally sound.
And so it's been quite a success. And at some point over the years with these expos, you used to do one per spring, and now you've kind of do one right on each side of the state line, it seems.
Well, we did a survey, actually. We're pretty diligent about asking people to come to the expos to sign their name and address and zip code. And it's not that we want to advertise anything to them, because we promise not to sell or give away these names. The idea is to gauge how successful we are in attracting people and where they're coming from. And we found that people won't go more than about 10 or 12 miles from where they live to attend these events or to really go to farmers markets. I mean, a few people will. We decided after a while that, we need to move this around the metro area. For a number of years, we had it at the Barstow School in South Kansas City. And then we did it for a few years on the north side at St. Pius X High School. And then we did it at Independence for 3 or 4 years. And then for about 8 years, came along that we decided, well, let's do two, because there seemed to be enough demand. So for the last, 10 years, almost every year we've had two events, one in Missouri and one in Kansas. And for 8 years we did it at the Shawnee Civic Center, which was a great location, but we just didn't have enough parking, and people were having to drive around in the parking lot. So we decided let's try something new. And so this year, for the first year, on March 29th, we had it at the Johnson County Community College, and it was a great success. And, in fact, we had record attendance of about over 1,700 people, which was about 20% more than we'd ever had.
Wow.
We also had more farmers. We had over 50 farmers turn out for this, and then we also have some nonprofit groups, too, that give out information. So it was a great success, and I want to make sure everybody knows that our second one is coming up this Saturday at the Penn Valley Community College Gym. And it'll be our third year at this location. It starts at 9:30. And before I forget, I want to encourage everybody to park in their multi-level parking lot off of Broadway because that's the has the most space and it's also covered in case it rains. So we have, in this case, about 45 farmers lined up at Penn Valley, and you can pretty much find whatever you want as far as that. We're late enough in the spring that there'll be a lot of greens and early season things. A lot of our farmers have what they call high tunnels, which are unheated greenhouses. The winters around here are generally sunny enough. They can be cold, but they tend to be, actually most people don't realize that Kansas City has relatively little precipitation in the winters, means that you can grow some stuff in a unheated greenhouse without wasting a lot of energy. So there'll be a lot of greens and things like that for people to buy.
And in the past, I know you've done like different, you know, there's been workshops maybe on different things or demonstrations. Is that going on throughout the day too? Or?
Well, this year we're not doing chef demonstrations, but I think at Penn Valley, Slow Food, one of the groups we work with that you may be familiar with, that's actually an international group promoting heritage and heirloom foods and local farmers. They do a lot of the same things that Kansas City Food Circle does, and so they're going to be giving a workshop there in another room next to the gym. Last I heard, that was going to happen, so encourage people to look in on that when they come.
And your website, kcfoodcircle.org?
Yeah, www.kcfoodcircle.org. You can get information on that. You can also download our directory, but if you come to the Penn Valley Expo, you get a free directory when you sign in there, when you go in. And it has over 90 farmers listed in there. And the amazing thing is you can get just about anything you want as far as either produce or meat products. And, of course, our farmers sign a pledge that that they use only free-range growing methods on their animals. In other words, their animals are free to roam and exercise their natural behavior. So if you're a meat eater, that's the place to go to become familiar with these people. And some of them, the range of methods of obtaining these foods are pretty wide. Some of them actually will deliver to you. Others you go out in the country and pick up the product or farmers markets. And there's a number of organic farmers markets now, which are also in our directory.
Got so many farmers markets now. Not that I'm complaining, but it's incredible. I mean, it's organic farmers markets, no less.
Right. Yeah. People want fresh food, and they want. And the other thing that is interesting is a lot of these farmers specialize in particularly tasty. When you say are growing tomatoes locally, and they're not, it's not necessary to ship them 1,500 miles. Like from California or Florida, then you can grow some of the what they call heirloom varieties that might be sensitive to damage in a truck. But we have farmers who specialize in these wonderfully sweet and tasty heirloom tomatoes. Now, they won't be any it's too early in the season to be at the expos, but that's why you go, is really to talk to these farmers and say, well, where are you going to be selling your tomatoes in June or July when they come in, and they'll tell you where it is. And we have a listing of these organic markets where you can get these. And all kinds of vegetables, lots of oriental vegetables. A lot of them specialize in pak choi. There's nothing better than fresh pak choi, in my opinion, or kale. It's really the healthy way to go.
Yeah, it's incredible. But you said it's probably too early for tomatoes, but there's a better than average chance that there will be tomato plants.
Oh, yes, I'm glad you brought that up, because if you're a gardener, one of the main things that we put this on for is to help gardeners come get their organically grown seedlings. And there will be tomatoes. There'll be thousands of seedlings at this event. And you're now only about 10 days away from when you can plant the tomatoes. So if you just set them in your window for a week or two, you can put them out. Some people wait till May 1st. I try to push it because I can cover them in plastic. But anyway, definitely come out and get your seedlings of all kinds, broccoli or whatever you're looking for. Another thing that we do, we try not to compete with the existing farmers markets. The expos that we put on in usually the last weekend of March and the first or second weekend of April, the whole purpose is to celebrate the new season and get people talking to the farmers to find out where they're going to get their produce later on. And one of these, one of the main purposes is to get your CSAs, or your community supported agriculture, which is essentially a subscription service where you you essentially hire your own personal farmer to grow what you want, then they will usually they have a drop-off place around the metro area, and then every week you go pick up your bag of veggies. They do it, and sometimes they'll just hand you a bag of whatever is ripe, or they'll let you select what you want from all their offerings and get as much as you want of one thing, for example. Others will say, okay, give me $100, and you can get $100 worth of stuff in the next month. So there's all kinds of flexibility and plans that would suit each person. Because some people, like if it's just two people in a family, they don't want a whole bunch of stuff. They can't eat it all in time.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be a plan that allow you to just get what you need.
Oh, well, that's...
That's called CSAs, or Community Supported Agriculture.
All right, and you can find out more about that at the Eat Local and Organic Expo.
Farmers Expo, right, at Penn Valley Community College, which is at the corner of 33rd and what's between Broadway and Southwest Traffic Way at 33rd Street.
And what time again?
What's that?
What time is it?
Starts at 9:30.
On Saturday, and it goes to like 2?
2:30. Right, and you want to... Don't come too early because we can't really open it up until the Kansas City Health Department's completed their inspection process. So you can come at 9:30, but not before.
All right. Well, Craig, thanks for checking in with us.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to go to Richard Mabian's interview with Teresa Kelly after these messages. And do stay tuned after Richard's interview. We'll have the calendar of events and Amy Goodman's commentary on dire climate warnings. Stay tuned.
On Tuesdays at 6 p.m., the newly revised Radioactive Magazine show will join forces with Mike Check to bring you the latest happenings from such diverse community activist groups as Occupy KC, Move to Amend, MoveOn.org, Whole Persons, Kansas City Freethinkers, and many more. Find out who's doing what in our community to improve the world we live in. That's Tuesdays at 6 p.m. on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
You can make it happen, and there are more and more communities, and we all go under the name of the environmental justice movement, and we're fighting for our lives, fighting for our communities. All it takes is people power.
I'm Neil Harvey. Mountains of waste in New York City are being turned into green, healthy jobs. It's green collar justice this week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Friday morning at 9:30, right after Between the Lines.
Hello, gang. I'm glad to be here today with you, and I have a very special person who I'm about to interview. And when I got up today and was coming this way, I was really excited because I really liked this person. I knew I was going to get a chance to see her. So Teresa, will you introduce yourself there and just kind of mention what you do?
Thank you, Richard. You always make me feel so welcome. I'm Teresa Kelly, and I work for Cultivate Kansas City on the Get Growing team.
Okay.
So.
And, well, that's, I'll just say that's one reason I have her here today is the Get Growing team. She does a whole lot of other things, but I promised her I wouldn't take her down those roads. I mean, she's a very active, actively involved lady. I met her some time ago. I think you were just getting in town, weren't you?
I was. I had just started with Cultivate Kansas City years ago. Yeah.
Well, the reason I wanted you in to talk today because we're getting ready to go into the growing season.
Yes.
And the name of your operation is Get Growing. So what a better time to have you on than to talk to people about what you have available to help them get growing.
Okay.
I want to start out by sharing a success story. I had Teresa come over and meet with my brother and his church congregation and some members from his church. And they decided they wanted to do a community garden. You know, they had a nice little space and they wanted to put one in. And the reason I'm doing this is because what Teresa does is not like something that I feel they need to be there every year with you to do. Once they teach you the techniques of how to get it done, introduce you to the right people, then it's really up to you to make it happen. And
right.
And that has happened over there with them. I know you're not even aware of it. In fact, he wasn't even aware I was going to be talking to you. But Sunday, he shot out his first battle cry. He said, all right, I got the tractor coming over, the turn us over next week. And he says, I'm telling you now, I need some members to come on out and help us plant this. This will be their third year.
Yeah.
And it's been a successful garden for the members of the church, but also the neighborhood, because they opened it up to the neighborhood. And to me, that's what this program is supposed to be about. Okay?
Yes.
All right, now, what do you do? What goes on?
Well, I work as a part of the Cultivate portion of the team. It's a collaboration between Kansas City Community Gardens, Lincoln University Cooperative Extension, and Cultivate. And so I work with people who want to start urban farms, and they need one-on-one technical assistance from anywhere from finding a lot to farm on to developing a marketing plan to sell their produce. The Kansas City Community Garden part of our team helps with community gardens like your brothers. In fact, they are the ones who went in with the extra technical assistance after with their membership with KCCG, and so has been continued support for them, I'm sure. And so it warms my heart because I was thinking about their garden. Sure. I think about people I've worked with every spring, and I wondered where that was. And so it makes me happy that they've continued to grow and blossom in their neighborhood.
Oh, it spread out so much that they've even opened it up to the rest of the neighborhood. The neighbors are able to come there and eat. It's just, every time I drive by, I think about you all going, well, you know, that's where it started. But it's also what we as environmental-minded folks envision an environmental-minded community being.
Right. Yeah. So what we like to do, it's like you said, we like to, rather than hand a person a fish to eat, we like to give them the tools and the connections of the community to help them thrive on their own. And so a real success story is one like your brother's garden where it's continued to grow and blossom. And I remember our original conversations with them over there at the church was they wanted a way to provide fresh fruits and vegetables. And they really were exploring a lot of different ways from having an on-site market to, you know, providing a type of a CSA distribution or something like that. So it feels like it's gone in a very organic direction, even though it's different than their original plan. It's still growing. It's providing a nucleus for the neighborhood. It's providing fresh food to people who might not ordinarily have access to that. And so that's what we look for. It doesn't always turn out the same way as we envision in the very beginning when we first meet with people. But the neighborhood really dictates how that turns out. And I guess that's one of the most important parts of our work is that we don't have a cookie cutter template that we provide people. We go out and we meet one-on-one with the leaders in the communities, the neighborhoods, church groups, faith-based organizations, even just groups of people who want to grow food in their neighborhood that get together and work as a team. So, and provide them the skills and techniques. And everyone has their own unique situation wherever they are. So we like to meet and figure out what that flavor might be, how they might develop, what scope of work that they actually are capable of doing to set them up for success.
Right. I think that's what has always made me a supporter of what you all do, because there's a lot of education involved.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
there's some classes that you all put on too, right?
Yeah, we've got some classes coming up. One of the things I want to, before I get into the classes, we offer a mini grant program.
Grant?
Yes, oh, everybody
boy.
Runs for money.
Oh, yeah, money.
It's nice seed money. So our first five rounds of mini grants that were finished in 2013, we awarded $50,000 in mini grants to 44 different groups and individuals who wanted to grow food in neighborhoods. Now, the important thing about the mini grants, it's funded through the Healthcare Foundation of Greater Kansas City. So we manage that in-house and the Get Growing team. So the bottom line with the grant, though, you have to prove that you are providing more food in the neighborhood where you're growing than is already available, and that you're meeting the needs of people who would not ordinarily be able to access food in an easy way. So there may be geographical elements or economic obstructions to people getting food. So mm-hmm. bottom line, it has to suit our mission before we can even consider granting the funds. And all that's on our website. So, but anyway, our next round is available closes June 13th, so people can start thinking about applying.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, we want to help people be successful at that. We really highly recommend that they work with one of the team members to help draft their project and turn their grant in.
Okay.
So we have a class coming up on April 22nd on how to write a mini grant. It's going to be over at Crosslines in their Don Blakely Community Annex.
Where's Crosslines?
It's at 646 South 7th Street Traffic Way.
So that's in Kansas.
Correct.
Okay.
So we'll be there. We invite people to bring their computers. We have a link to registering for the class on our Facebook page, Get Growing KC.
If I'm not mistaken, that's down in Armadale area. So you're not from Kansas City, so you're
no.
not. No. Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, that's Armadale, folks. For
Did
those
you see
of
that
you
deer
know?
In the headlight look?
Yeah,
you asked
I know.
Me that? Anyway, I've explored a lot of neighborhoods I never knew about, and I don't always attach a name to them, but I can tell you where they are.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we want to make this successful, so people will be – it's a hands-on type of workshop where we're not going to help you fill out your form, but we're going to walk through
good.
It step by step. We have a tip sheet available on the website with the forms, so it's a fairly easy grant to write. So we want to make this, you know, really successful for people. That's why we're offering this workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also, a year ago, when we were refunded, part of our project scope was dealing with water issues in urban growers, because we'd seen a real need for that in the year before, in 2012, when, mm-hmm. you know, it was a drought situation. Everybody got big water bills or didn't have water, had a lot of crop failures. So we've been doing water workshops and a lot of one-on-one technical assistance. We've developed water audits so that we can go out to people's gardens and help them figure out about how much water they might need based on their land, their crops they're growing, the type of gardening they're doing.
That's a great service.
Conservation efforts, those type of things, and then we make recommendations. So
recommendations to the landowner,
yes,
the homeowner.
Okay. Make recommendations for them to help, you know, help them conserve water and
what kind of recommendations?
Well, things like mulching. I guess mulch is probably the biggest thing. 2 to 3, 4 inches of mulch on a garden. The best place to store water is in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you mulch, that's the biggest thing you can do to conserve water is mulch. And it's not just a sprinkle. it's 2 to 3 inches of something like straw.
So is that something you put down before you plant, like a food not lawn type situation, or is this something that
that's actually
after you plant?
Mulching is part of that, like no-till type type growing, so that's built into that system. What I'm talking about is, you know, raised beds or even just in-ground plots where people will plant their transplants or plant their seeds. Then you want to mulch around where you've planted. And, of course, you have to let the seeds emerge. But then once they've emerged and gotten tall enough, you want to go ahead and mulch around them as well to keep those root systems cool.
Right.
It mediates heat. It also keeps from, you know, things, the water doesn't evaporate out of the soil. So, I don't know. We just can't say enough about it's mulch
it
and
makes
all
sense
caps.
To me. It makes sense. Well, one of the reasons is because that, as you mentioned, we had a drought problem a year or two ago. We're going to have another one coming up this summer. There's no doubt in my mind because of what happened in California. That's coming our way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having that knowledge is good for not only what you're speaking about, for other things also.
Right.
Do you ever talk about rain barrels or anything like that?
You know, we have a whole system of, and part of the water audit is figuring out how much water you need for your garden. And so that was the biggest aha moment for me, is when we actually figure out how much water a crop needs. And a rain barrel is like spitting in the ocean. It's not adequate, and in fact, we with urban farms, especially if we're integrating any type of water catchment system, and we have 500-gallon totes that we make available for people for purchase to develop a system, and we'll help them develop a system suitable for their growing area. That for an urban farmer, because it is such a you know, you're dependent on the rain, and if there is none, it doesn't fill your tanks, you know, unless you have another way to fill them. So that is a backup system, you know, as part of an integrated, we look at a holistic integrated approach to water management for plots.
That's interesting. When we first went into the environmental movement, that's the same thing that was being said about recycling. Recycling is just a tinkle of what really needs to occur. To really deal with this, the stewardship of the planet.
Right.
And now I'm hearing the same thing about the rain barrels and the watering, and there's a lot of emphasis being put on in the rain barrels. It's there. I don't have any problem with it because it's a good education tool.
Right.
But as you said, it's just a splash.
Yeah.
Or it's water.
Well,
you
and,
need.
You know, if anyone really, if they look at just your residential home and you've got a rain barrel on one corner of your house, you know, if it's, you know, raining any rate at all, your rain barrel's full in a few minutes.
Right.
And so then it runs over. So what are you doing with that runoff? You know, cities refer to that as stormwater. We farmers and growers refer to what falls from the sky as rain. So one of the other things that I guess for me personally is trying to cross-pollinate those terms to where when we're talking about funding for water and those types of things, or funding assistance and involving the municipalities, that, you know, farms and gardens are natural water sinks that keep stormwater out of the stormwater system, which is overtaxed anyway.
Yeah.
So anything you can do to mitigate that is helpful.
Again, education.
Yeah,
education.
Exactly.
We started an after-school program in Wyandotte County at 10th in Washington for elementary students, grades 3 to 5, fifth grade. And that's one of the subjects, one of the initial classes was about stormwater runoff and getting them to understand what it is to put stuff in those drains, you know.
Right.
It's dramatic because they're young, but now they're making them aware of the fact, because as they grow up, they're going to need to know that a lot more than we needed to know it when we were growing up.
Yeah.
That's the whole key to all of this. Everything we're talking about is really going to need to be known in another 10, 15 years because conditions and things have been changed so drastically.
Right.
Okay. Now, where are we?
So we do have some water workshops coming up. One is Thursday, April 10th. At the Urban Impact Center over on Paseo Boulevard, and then we have another one in July on the 10th at Kansas City Community Gardens on Kensington Avenue over by Swope Park.
Octavia, we'll do. We'll try to see if we can get those posted on our website.
That'd be great.
On our Facebook page,
yeah.
To make people aware of them. And if, unless I'm brain dead, which I am every now and then, send me a copy of those dates so that when we get near those dates, we can make sure that the programs that we have prior to those dates, something said about it so we can remind people that there's an opportunity to do that.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Anytime you're going to help. My eyes kind of bucked when you said the water audits. I mean, you know, y'all really growing out of that.
That's
why I can't catch up with you. You're out there doing so much, you know.
Yeah.
And you got people's names that I hear that I've never heard of before now that are working with you out there and stuff. You know, that's really great.
So, and I guess, you know, I've not, you know, we've been to conferences and we, you know, we keep our finger on the pulse of what's going on in urban ag. And, you know, water audit is pretty unique, and it's something special that we've developed here. So I think as a team, we're all really proud of being able to offer that to people.
Yeah, and I think it's a quantity that's needed to be known.
Yeah.
That people don't take in consideration.
Right.
When I went over and had my on-the-job training, working a one-acre farm over Joe Jennings.
Yeah.
I came out of that realizing that if you don't have the time, don't do it, because it's tough to keep an acre worth of food up by yourself. I mean, and then when the stuff is ready, you got to go pick it. And I mean, I was just, oh, man, that was one heck of an experience to see what you can do with an acre. You can get a lot of food out of it.
Yeah, you can get a lot of food. A lot of our farmers farm a lot less than that in the city.
Yes.
So, yeah, so, it's amazing.
It's amazing. And I'm telling you, it got to the, if I missed that okra one day, boy, they'd be so long, you know.
It'd be like bananas.
Yes. I mean, it's just, you mean.
And you don't want to eat them then.
Oh, I became a living witness to tell people that if you don't have the time, this is one of those things, if you don't have the time, really don't mess with it, because you got to be there. You can't run a regular career.
Right.
Maintain an acre. That's
well, and what's beautiful about, you know, the whole food system is that even if you don't grow food, there's opportunities to really support your neighbors and local growers by going to farmers markets.
Yeah.
You can buy into a community-supported agriculture or CSA where you get a share of vegetables that are locally grown by a farmer that you know. So there's, you know, you can demand at your grocery stores that they source locally. You can maybe demand's not a head.
So
when you eat out, you know, folk, you know, go to those places that are sourcing food locally to really support that, because, you know, dollars talk. And so, you know, to support the health of a local food system, it's, you know, vote with that and participate in that way. Tell your friends, educate your friends about, you know, buying local produce. Of course, we have an organic slant, so we like to include that in our focus as well. But we don't only help people who are growing organically.
Right.
We help anyone who comes to us wanting assistance.
Well, you know, there's one thing about it. When I first started, we didn't have a youth.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any organizations out there like yours. And so we constantly beating the drum to people about the need for them to do this, you know. And we weren't really getting anywhere because we wasn't there to actually hands-on do some things.
Yeah.
And then you all came along where you gave it more of a concentration.
Mm-hmm.
On the get growing part and the things that it takes to get growing.
Yeah.
And when you just made that comment about folks needing to understand the reason we need them to start participate with farmers markets, I was just thinking, probably going to take a business, an organization that comes in to focus just on that and find ways to help people understand why it's necessary for them to start considering that as an alternative. You know, I mean, the food prices themselves are going to run folks somewhere, but I just see that it's coming. It's steadily growing. I haven't seen any cutback if anything, I see other areas falling to the wayside as not being as ideal as food mm-hmm. and water. Your basics now are starting
right.
to become the front burner type issues that
right.
people are talking about, you know.
Right.
Back at one time, it was the creation of green collar jobs and all that just flitted the airways. And it was all rhetoric in most cases because they haven't even figured that out yet.
Right, right.
But eating is eating.
I mean, everyone eats.
Everyone eats.
Everyone's connected to a farmer. And so I like to know who my farmer is. And so that's what we encourage people, to know who their farmer is.
Well, you know, I have no idea what our time is, but I know that I want to kind of get this spring this tune in. It's been a delight sitting there talking to you. Now I'm going to bug you, so. Okay. What's happening with the aid program, though?
Oh.
What's going on with it?
Oh, my infamous claim to fame. Yeah. Myself and Sherry McNeil, you know, we it's been since 2011. We got our ordinance changed in Roland Park to allow backyard hens, and we did bring that back through the Sustainability Committee a year later, and so we brought it in line with other cities around the country and in Missouri too. So the fees are a little bit lower. There's still a buy-in because we strongly believe, too, that there needs to be a buy-in because this is serious business. We laugh about backyard hens and eggs and all the puns that fall out of your mouth when you're talking, but you're taking care of animals, so we want people to be serious about it. So the fee to buy in, I believe, is $50 now, but to renew is only $20, and that's compared to it was $175. So that's annual, correct. So it's a special permit, you know, yeah. Yeah, and so I think only six families still, and you know it wasn't overrun with, you know, we haven't been overrun with chickens running amok, and it's been handled very nicely. The people involved are very respectful and obey the rules, and so it's been a really good thing for the city.
Do you have a limit on chickens?
Yeah, six. We allow six.
Wow, I remember some places like Kansas City had a limit of two or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah. In Kansas City, I believe, is 15 now with no roosters. So, yeah, they went back a couple of years ago. Correct. That's where you get into problems.
Yeah.
You don't really need a rooster in an urban setting, suburban
right.
setting.
Right.
They're there to protect the hens and to corral them into a safe space and, of course, make babies. But, it's not necessary.
Right.
We
right.
all know we get eggs whether there's a rooster
right,
or not.
Right. And some folks are learning. Still
yeah,
learning.
Yeah, yeah. That was probably our number one myth-busting
yeah.
thing we had to address. But, yeah, so everything's going well. We've been giving some advice or help to other communities who want to get an ordinance in their area.
I think six is an appropriate number. 15 is getting to be a lot.
Yeah. That's a lot of eggs to deal with,
yeah,
too. You know, when you know you get about five a week from a hen, that's a lot of eggs.
While working with Joe Jennings,
mm-hmm.
and he would have chickens all the time, at least once or twice a year, he gets a big shipload in. And I agree with you. It gets to be quite
yeah.
a task to keep up. Well, he went out of town and asked me to manage that part of the farm for him. And he put a cage out there to catch wild animals.
Yeah.
In the kitchen. Do you have any problems with wild animals?
No. You know, it's... Yeah.
You don't have that problem.
Not really. No. I've never seen, and Sherry and I touch base on this every now and then, and we've never seen any evidence of someone trying, you know, something, trying
yeah.
to get in our coops.
Get in the coops.
I've had a hawk, a new, like, probably a year old hawk, try to buzz my coop. But,
yeah.
you know, the beauty of a good ordinance is that they're protected. You
yeah.
know, they're in a covered run, so a hawk or other things can't get in there.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
Well,
you know, it's being good animal steward.
He had his inside a shelter, inside a chicken hutch.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in there, and while he was gone, and a possum had got caught in the cage.
Oh, no.
And when I went to touch the cage, you know what, possum.
Yeah.
I was done
yeah.
deal.
Yeah.
You'll be here when Joe gets
yeah,
back.
Yeah, there's nothing like face-to-face with a possum.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good. I wanted to know about that. That's good to know. Now, we got a couple of things going on in Kansas City, and I don't know if you know about them or not, but I thought I'd ask.
Okay.
One of them is coming from Cultivate,
yeah.
KC. What is her name? Vandana
Shiva. Vandana Shiva
yeah.
is coming April 17th and 18th. So there will be she's giving a talk at Unity on the Plaza on the 17th. And then there's a dinner the next day.
17th of April?
Yes.
That's the same thing at the BPU, the conference in Kansas City, Kansas. Okay.
Vandana Shiva will be more fun.
I'm sure will, but I got me, as a speaker. So she, well, I won't say a whole lot about her. I think we got some other folks
to talk about her.
But she's come. She's from India.
Correct. Okay. She's a physicist.
Okay.
So, and I've been hearing about her. I used to farm in Montana.
Okay.
And part of our organic farm club there, we had someone come and report on her findings years and years and years ago when the seed patenting craze started and they had gone to India. And, you know, they have a unique system or had a unique system in place where, you know, the villagers would all grow and then they'd get together and they would pick who had the best crop, who had the best seeds, and then they would save those. And that's what it was a seed program that they managed internally. It was natural mm-hmm. selection. And so so then, you know, when the corporate world stepped in and they patented different seed varieties.
Monsanto got busy.
Yeah, well, I don't remember. I think that's who it was, but I won't say yes because it's been a long time. A lot of water under the bridge since then.
Yeah.
So anyway, but the corporate world did get involved with the seeds at that point in India, and I remember hearing, you know, her first reports on that, and so it's really exciting for me to be able to be involved in bringing her here. So anyway,
that's a big move. And then now there's another group that is putting on this food summit. You know anything about them?
You know, that's in the Cultivate Radar, but I'm really focused on the Get Growing team, and I can't be everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm not the best person to talk about that.
Yeah, they're not directly responsible
for
it. They're kind of like...
I think there's a committee. There's a committee that has been putting that together and giving feedback to the powers that be. So, I can't speak to that.
So there's a lot going on in Kansas City metropolitan area that has to do with food. And that's what I started seeing from my perspective, you know. And so as a radio program that's involved with the ecology, the environment, we're going to make sure that we try to figure out some way we can have people at those different places so we can tell people about them beforehand and then report back to them. Any closing words?
Well, I just would invite everybody to come to our website, www.getgrowingkc.org. Our classes, our workshops, and our information is all there. We also are on Facebook, and we do our events through there. If you want to register for a class, you can call Sharon Goldstein at 816-931-3877, and we'll get you registered. We like everyone to register so that we're not surprised, and we have plenty of materials for everybody. So I'd invite everybody to get growing this spring.
I know that's right. Give me our website one more time.
www.getgrowingkc.org.
We thank you, and I really appreciate you coming by to see me.
Thank you, Richard.
All righty.
Hi, this is Natural Lee, and I have your events, your environmental events for Kansas City area. We have growing and cooking vegetables in your garden. It takes place on April 10th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., and you'll learn how to grow and cook vegetables from your garden. It's hosted by the UM Extension Office, and they'll teach practical tips for growing vegetables you can plant in cool weather, storage information, and new ideas for preparation. Class will feature a sampling of vegetables, and there will be two classes provided at the University of Missouri Extension Office. More information about this event can be found on the Green Ability Magazine website. Also, as it was mentioned earlier in the show, Dr. Vandana Shiva is set to speak here in Kansas City at Unity Temple on the Plaza. This takes place Thursday, April 17th at 7 p.m. Dr. Vandana Shiva's lecture, Cultivating Diversity, Freedom, and Hope, will address the value of diversity in nature and in society, as well as how the monoculture of the mind can destroy that diversity at every level. And the 14th annual Kansas City Eat Local and Organic Food Expo is coming up this Saturday. And The expo will feature a series of short documentary films as well as a presentation on biodiversity by Slow Food Kansas City. Both are the food expo is free admission and free parking, and there will be local growers of organic and free-range produce selling their wares, including garden plant starts, as well as free organic gardening information. Also taking place this Saturday is the Sierra Club fundraiser and silent auction. It's located at the Thompson Barn at 11184 Lackman Road from 7 to 10 p.m., and live music will be provided by the band Solar. Next week's Eco Radio show will be talking about coal and mountaintop removal. And to close out today's show, we'll hear from Amy Goodman.
Yeah, thank you, Naturally. We're going to hear Amy's commentary on dire climate warnings. And that's kind of the theme of, I'm going to go through a couple of other environmentally oriented programs coming up on KKFI. On alternative radio at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, right after Democracy Now!, Professor Paul Ehrlich, professor of population studies at Stanford University. He's a MacArthur Fellow, and he is going to be talking about distress signals from Earth and how much can be done if we change our ways. That's alternative radio. That's Wednesday morning at 9, again, right after Democracy Now!. Friday morning at 9:30 on Pioneers, Green Collar Justice, Another World is Possible. Entrepreneur and activist Omar Freya and deconstruction business owner Justin Green are solving for pattern. By working to eliminate waste, they are creating green collar jobs and improving the environment in some of the nation's most underserved communities. That's on Pioneers Friday morning at 9:30. And then on Wings, Women's International News Gathering Service, heard Saturday afternoons at 2:30, something on food sovereignty. Beverly Bell explains the movement for food sovereignty and its relationships as opposing the globalized food system and support of indigenous and local agricultural models, with a special emphasis on the pivotal roles of women. That's on Wings Saturday afternoon at 2:30. And that about brings us up to speed for this week's program. You can keep right here for Sabor Latino coming up at 7 after Amy Goodman's commentary. Or if you want more environmental programming, KDHX, KDHX.org, the community radio station in St. Louis, starts their locally produced Earthworms at 7 o'clock on their community radio station.